We're listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Thank you. a little bit about what the county commissioners are doing right now. What are you, is on your agenda, like the three top things right now for Brevard?
Sure, and it's really tough to do anything like this in a 30-minute program. Even if we had, you know, 3 hours, it would be impossible to do it full justice.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the basic crux of it, as simplistically as I can put it, is the county commission took a little over $105.3 million that we received from the feds in the first bucket. We've gotten some money since then. We had another, I think, 18 or so million for individual assistance, mostly for rent, mortgage assistance, things of that nature. And we have split up as much of it as we can to try to tackle a whole slew of different problems and issues that come about as a result of COVID. Everything from buying protective equipment, gowns, gloves, masks, things like that, disinfecting of government facilities, helping to pay for COVID-19 antibody testing and COVID-19 testing, offsetting some costs that EMS, because the county does EMS transport, so the emergency medical transport from the north end to the south end, putting in place plexiglass or acrylic barriers in different government areas, paying for thermometers to scan people as they come into different areas, doing individual assistance, as I mentioned, so helping folks that can't afford food, helping folks that can't afford rent or mortgage that are at risk of being evicted or becoming in arrears, putting together personal protective equipment for small businesses, funding Career Source Brevard to help them get people reemployed, putting in place a tremendous amount in small business grants across the county. And I can talk for a couple hours about that if you want.
Yeah, but you know, like we noticed like there's a lot of groups in Brevard and a lot of people like the Community Action Board, which I'm on now too,
yeah,
that are also doing the same thing. And it's kind of like a duplicate. But what I'm hearing and I'm seeing is there has to be like a criteria for people to qualify for like the small business loan, the grants.
Yes.
To get assistance with their rent and whatever troubles they're having. And they're facing a lot of challenges.
Yes.
And people, you know, social media has become like a double-edged sword sometimes. You can get good things out and you can get bad things out. And
right,
there's so much negativity drowning out what you all have in the county for people to actually apply. Where are we missing that message that, hey, there is money, but we're not going to come knocking on your door and just give you $4,000.
Well,
lead us through the process if somebody wanted to apply.
Well, some of it, in fact, we have come knocking to their door and said, yeah, here's money. In fact, I've had people hang up on me and on my staff because they figure it's a scam. The government's never going to call and offer us money. So I've called those folks back at least one more time, and some of them have listened, some of them have not. But, you know, you can only do what you can do. What I can tell you as far as the small business program, and I'm happy to tell you what we've done with that, but at this point, there is no more money available for small business grants. We have put out millions upon millions of dollars to small businesses throughout the county. What I can tell you, though, is that the individual assistance, the mortgage assistance, the grant assistance, the food program assistance, all of that is still ongoing. The mortgage and rent assistance, there are very flexible guidelines with respect to how much someone can earn. Obviously, you have folks that are all over the economic spectrum from the time that this thing started. They may have been really rich, they may have been really poor, they may have been somewhere in between, but the bottom line is if they can't afford to pay what their rent is at the end of the day, it's a problem for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you lose your job,
right,
Mr. COVID-19, we have seen, it doesn't really care what your race is, your religion, the color of your skin, how much
your
money you were making,
economic
right, background, it is coming for you.
Right,
right?
And it doesn't
so
care
somebody,
about your...
So
and it decimates
right, so somebody,
everything, your finances,
right,
your life.
So somebody could be paying $4,000 a month for rent or mortgage, and somebody could be paying $600. But still, that is your place that you have to live and save.
Yes. I mean, the bottom line with it, though, on the individual assistance front, the Health and Human Services Department, it's headed by a gentleman named Ian Golden. If you go on Google or you go to brevardfl.gov, you can put in HHS or put in COVID individual assistance in the search bar. As long as you put in Brevard County, if you go to Google, and individual assistance, it will come up as one of the first few results. There is a form that you have to complete. I will tell you, it does ask questions about your finances.
And it should, right? Because we don't want people to be scamming you guys.
No, I mean, the fact is, I'll just be honest. I'm fortunate enough that I don't, you know, I don't have nearly as much of an impact as a result of the virus as a lot of other folks do. And I should not be gaining, or someone in my position shouldn't be gaining as a result of a program like that being made available. The point is to help those folks that are most directly impacted and to try to focus the money as surgically as we can on that. So to the extent that we can help people out, you know, we try to do that. There are caps on the program. The caps are a little over $1,000 a month, depending on how long you stay in the program, you could potentially get money for up to 10 months on that. The goal is to get people in a better position. It may not pay the entirety of someone's rent, but it certainly can help them out.
We're on to keep them in their home because one of the ways that we're all, of course, me being a nurse and a he always says, a concerned citizen, which I am, is in order to fight the virus, you have to stay inside.
You have to have a place to live.
So you have to have a place to live, exactly. So when people are evicted and they don't have somewhere to live, then that process is disrupted.
And they cost, really cost the state and the county more money being homeless than they do to help them.
Right, so it's better to help. So here's the thing, though. We're seeing all these pop-up groups that are claiming they're helping people who have lost their possessions or about to be evicted, or maybe they've got a roof that's leaking and there's damage. Where can people go to find the information, what you all are doing, so that they could go on that website, hit the button, and say, let me fill this form out?
If they go to brevardfl.gov, oftentimes we'll have a banner on there, but if the banner isn't running for any reason, if they go to the search bar and they put CARES Act or they put COVID-19, they will get a slew of resources. As I mentioned, we have a department that handles disproportionately all of that. There is a little crossover between different departments, but HHS is the department that you want to look at. What I will tell you is there is no plan in the near or intermediate future to discontinue the individual assistance or to discontinue the food assistance program. Whether something opens up in the future with respect to reopening the small business grants, it's probably going to depend on what the feds do. So I don't really know what direction that's going to go in. I can tell you that different commissioners have taken different strategies in their individual districts as to how to allocate that. In my district, for instance, I tried to cover as many businesses as I possibly could. So as a result of that, we have actually over double the number of a lot of the other commission districts in terms of businesses that actually received sizable checks. I mean, five-digit checks from the government. But that said, the amount that we can give them on the individual basis isn't necessarily as high as what some of the other districts did because they focused it on a smaller number of businesses. So there's a trade-off.
And we've seen where some people have scammed the government and they've gotten millions of dollars, and now they're caught, basketball players and things like that. So when a business applies, my understanding is the businesses who qualify, they have to have some sort of a proof that they had their employees still on their payroll, they were still paying their rent and all that kind of stuff?
Different programs have different levels of verification. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that from a county perspective, depending on the amount of the program and the likelihood and potential for abuse, we will have third-party verification for some of our programs, but not for others. It just depends on what the cost to have that third-party verification is and what the likelihood of abuse is. I can tell you from my perspective, there are certain areas that really aren't as ripe for abuse, and frankly, I'd rather not spend the money doing intense verification and just getting that same amount of money toward the actual goal.
Yeah. There are others. It comes down to trust, though.
Right.
You trust
right.
that business.
Nonprofits, for instance, there are a slew of nonprofits in D2 that I've made hundreds of thousands of dollars available to. Most of them are related toward housing or toward feeding or toward reemployment. In fact, almost all of them are related to that, if not all of them. 2-on-1 Brevard, for instance, I've given up to $50,000. Housing for Homeless, the same thing, up to $50,000. National Veterans Homeless Support, up to $50,000. Children's Hunger Project, up to $40,000. Hummingbird Food Pantry, which is more in the northern end of the county, up to $40,000. Ready for Life Brevard, which is down in Melbourne, south of my district, but services the county as well. They take kids that age out of foster care and get them housed and get them reemployed, which is a huge issue
now. So you wouldn't want to check those with a third party.
We can do that internally.
And we know those nonprofits, and they've been doing great things right along.
Right. Yeah, Same thing, Crosswinds.
And I'd like to thank you, Commissioner Lober. You guys did, before the passing of Mr. Lopez, provide CARES Act to the two organizations. I believe it was for United Third Bridge and the Puerto Rican Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And we really like to thank you because we're a very under-noticed community. So when we are able to have those funds to continue to do our work, it means a lot, especially in an amazing partnership with the commission.
Well, think about it. You still have to pay rent on those buildings, right? You still have to pay utilities.
Alarms.
You still have to cut the grass.
Yeah.
You still have to have a caretaker. You still have to have your internet work. So he's right. Some places you really don't need the third-party verification.
Because
you already
have a working relationship with those nonprofits, which is one thing that's very unique to Brevard. Our commissioners really have their hands in in the community. So they know who they don't have to bother verifying with. Oh, we've been working with you for 10 years. We've been working with you for 15
right.
years.
It comes down to trust.
And it cuts
like
the red
else.
Tape. It comes down to trust, and it comes to getting the funds where they got to go as quickly as possible.
Right, because there's a cost to do the additional verification. And if we can do it in-house and it's a painless process, great.
And did they have to apply for those, or did they just come speak
those,
with you?
Those, if it's a large amount, it has to be commissioner-driven. So if someone reaches out, certainly depending on what's available to each of the commissioners, they have different abilities. I can tell you with mine, based on some concerns I had with folks saying there might be cronyism and you'd have folks come and kiss the ring as you have it. I said, look, I'm gonna do research on my own. I'm gonna do my due diligence to figure out where the money needs to go, and I'm gonna reach out to these different groups. I'm not going to have folks solicit the funds, because I think that's where you start to get into potentials for abuse. So Crosswinds, for instance, Family Promise is another one here. Both of them I made up to $50,000 available. So when you look at just even the D2 amounts that were extended out there, it's a lot of money for nonprofits. And I will tell you, I feel kind of funny doing it, in the sense that I never thought on the front end of running for a political position that I would have any situation in which I'd be comfortable taking what originated at any point in time as tax money and allocating it to different groups.
Yeah, it must be. It's odd. It's odd. So each commissioner had a certain amount for their district?
Right. Each commissioner had $5 million out of the $105.3 in their district. I can just real briefly run through what I did with my $5 million if you want. And
yes.
we can go into more detail if you want. Mm-hmm. But 1.8, and these are all approximate numbers, so there could be some adjustment up or down based on how many people participate in some of these programs. But right now, The general breakdown is $1.8 million, which is the biggest chunk, went to the small business program expansion. So what I did in D2 is there were 364, I believe, businesses which received the full $10,000. And I will tell you, we had way more than any other district, because everyone in my office, myself included, and part of the MIRA, the Merritt Island Redevelopment Agency, CRA, some of their staff as well, we went to, we called, we wrote to businesses all over D2 and said, hey, this is available, apply. And I'm not knocking the other commissioners, but our numbers reflect that we did a tremendous amount of outreach.
That's an amazing effort on your part.
Well, that's the thing. If people don't know, in lay terms, we say you tell somebody, but it's outreach.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
We
you
did
have
that,
to let them know.
And then they were all vetted on the front end for their losses. That was only for a period of a few months last year. Knowing that almost all of those folks had losses that continued, restaurants still are hurting. They're still hurting now. Mm-hmm. Let's say a taxi company, they're still hurting. Car manufacturers. Some of these places that sell used cars, they're not back in business. People aren't driving because they're working remotely. There's certain industries
hotels, right?
Restrictions. You can't rent to locals. You can only rent to somebody coming. So those kinds of things also play into our economy.
So we took those businesses, and every one of those businesses that had at least one owner that resided in Brevard County, I don't care if they owned 0.5%. Of a business interest in it, we cut them another $5,000 over and above the $10,000 they received. I stopped counting when we were about 340, 345 out of the 364. Substantially all of them will be receiving the check if they have. And I can tell you the last round of checks that's going out in the mail is going out today. So if they don't receive it by, let's say, later on this week, that means something went haywire. But I can tell you the vast majority in D2 are receiving that. Everything else I did is done countywide. So $900,000, I put in place a hazard pay program for our fire rescue first responders. It's just the folks that actually respond to calls for service. So EMTs, paramedics, firefighters, folks along those lines. If ocean rescue lifeguards, for instance, if they had to interact with the public during the time that COVID's been in place, they got a flat $1,500. It's important not just to be nice, but because we're hemorrhaging a lot of the younger employees. And when I say younger, I don't mean in terms of their age, but in terms of how long they've been with the county. Between 0 and 5 years, it's incredible. It's a double-digit loss in terms of the percentage. 0 to 10 years,
yes,
or even 5 to 10 is bad.
So you're stopping the bleeding because
something. Right.
And you know, the other thing is, too, a lot of people were saying, well, the county is not doing enough. But I think they need to go on the website and see what you all have done.
Because, we've done a lot.
You know, because people just can't say things without backing it up.
Yeah, and I'll fly through the rest of them kind of quickly here because there were a lot. $500,000 out of the portion that was delegated to D2 to allocate went to the Emergency Operations Center. $460,000 went to countywide first responder tuition reimbursement and training, again, to help stem that tide of people leaving. They were leaving before. They still continue to leave, up into COVID. So hopefully that will help us with that. I talked about the nonprofits. We had so far $355,000 out of the D2 funds go to that. $165,000, and this is relevant for tomorrow's purposes with the commission meeting, goes to a vaccine incentive for all of the Brevard County Sheriff's Office corrections and patrol deputies, namely the folks that interact with the public, all of the first responders I mentioned that qualified for the other program, and all of the volunteer and auto aid agreement cities and groups that we have. So the firefighters and the first responders on the fire rescue side and any of the cities with which we have auto aid agreements, and I think 14 of the 16 or thereabouts we have them with, so substantially all of them, they'll get the first responders, if they get either the Moderna or the Pfizer, $75 for each of the two vaccines they get stuck with, $75 for the first, $150 between the two of them. When Johnson & Johnson comes out, they'll get $100 if they get stuck with that, since it's just a one-dose series. $160,000 is going to a countywide indigent burial program. The lowest amount that's covered is $5,500 per burial if there are veterans.
Yeah, the Community Action Board talked about that at the meeting as well.
That's amazing.
And we've had.
So wait a minute. So you're saying you'll give them a bonus for getting the shots?
Yes. So that's my approach.
That's an incentive. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got to tell you, there's just not enough info out there to. I mean, first, wherever you are with constitutional questions, I don't even get there because there's been no discussion that I've seen locally here to address the fact that there is just an absolute lack of info showing with respect to the vaccines that it prevents you from carrying it and transmitting it to others. I think people by and large have the right to risk their own health. I think where you start to get into a question is risking the health of others. And if there's simply next to no data available to show that by forcing first responders to get vaccinated, that it would improve health outcomes for others, I don't feel that it's even appropriate to consider doing that. So I can tell you at this point, the chance I'm going to vote for that as it's phrased now is non-existent.
You and I have talked about it. You wouldn't take the vaccine when your turn comes.
Oh, of course. And yes. I would encourage everyone that's healthy, unless their doctor says otherwise, to get vaccinated.
Yes, yes. I like the way you think. You're going to give people an option.
I'd like to encourage them.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good. So
and you have a big heart, because I had heard nothing about anything being put aside for indigent burials. So that's amazing.
So we have 2 minutes left. So any of the COVID-related things, what's going on with the masks? I know you fought really hard for us to wear masks in Brevard. And what happened with that?
Can I add one last thing? I won't even try to get through all the rest of it.
Yes.
But another item that's a big deal is we put $75,000 out of the District 2 funds for a countywide independent pharmacy vaccine freezer program to allow any independent pharmacy, so not the big Walmart, CVS type, but all of the independent pharmacies anywhere in the county, to get vaccine freezers if they agree to start inoculating and make efforts to inoculate folks for COVID-19.
And those are expensive.
Yeah, they're the cheapest are about $1,800.
Uh-huh.
So I can tell you the first one that submitted for reimbursement in Merritt Island is Hobbs. They already had 1,200 people lined up to get vaccinated for an $1,800 investment from the county. I think that's money well spent.
Yeah. And there are a lot of specialty pharmacies that would probably take you up on that, because you know what? If we talk about the community, some people just don't have the time, the gas, the energy to go to Walgreens or CVS, but they will go to a mom and pop grocery store or pharmacy in their neighborhood.
And there are a lot of underserved areas as well. I can tell you, even where we are here in Cocoa, there's some areas that are not far from here where, frankly, they don't have the level of access that a lot of other areas do. So if we can make some of the discount pharmacies put them in a position where they can afford to get a vaccine freezer, and they'll turn around and vaccinate portions of the population that either wouldn't get vaccinated or would take far longer to get vaccinated, I think it's money well spent.
I think so too.
I agree.
So what about the mask? So that was a dead issue, but you got beat up on that a bit.
You know, sometimes you've got to do what you think is right, regardless of where it falls on the political spectrum. I'll tell you, I'm a human being before I'm a Republican or on any side of the aisle. You know, I'm proud to be registered with the party I'm registered with, but my first and foremost obligation is a member of the human race that cares about other people. I will tell you, I knew that I was going to get flack bringing it up. I didn't know that it had no chance whatsoever of passing. I wasn't doing it to make a show of it. I really, you know, I did give it my go. I knew that it would be an uphill battle. I don't regret pushing it. Knowing what I knew then, I would do the same again.
Yeah. So, Brian, absolutely. Why do you think, like, right now, I had both vaccines. I've told you guys I had the Pfizer. I'm still wearing my mask at work. What do you think the pushback is with so many, like, even people of color? They're saying, well, there's not enough information. But here's the thing. When the call goes out for people to volunteer for the vaccine to be tested on, people go. And in this case, there were so many people that went. But for some reason, people of color, they're saying, just didn't answer to that call to be part of the research for the vaccine. And I know it has to do with something from, you know, long ago with the TB and all that. But I'm trying to say to people, look, I took it and I'm fine. And I think if you want to see your grandparents, your children be around, your neighbors and whatnot, you're doing it for the common good. You're really not doing it just for yourself.
I mean, here's what I can tell you, and I don't know, you know, all of this is anecdotally based, so, you know, I don't have a study to back this up. I'll just put that out there in the interest of full disclosure. You have certain groups that are more or less distrustful of the government for right reason, wrong reason, no reason, part of a right reason, part of a wrong reason. Why that's the case, I don't want to get into, but the fact is there's certain groups that are less trustful of information that they get from the government, some understandably so. I think that you have a lot of people, unfortunately, that are spreading misinformation about the virus, and the vast majority of these folks that are spreading this misinformation don't have any medical background whatsoever. These are folks that read an article or saw something on Facebook or on social media that now feel that they're entitled to essentially practice medicine and infectious disease. I just tune all of that out, I'll just tell you. The folks that I listen to and whose opinion I value on questions that are medical in nature, they're epidemiologists, they're infectious disease physicians, they're folks that have a background and an expertise in this area, because this is something that, frankly, my own knowledge and what I see anecdotally just living and existing in the community, it's only of limited value. So, you know, the folks that pick and choose their experts, I get that there may be some of that with some folks that are political, but when I got into this position, there were folks that I immediately trusted. I can tell you they're folks that I've relied on from the get-go before COVID was a word or an acronym that any of us have heard of. Those are the same folks that I listen to now. None of it's changed. Our local director of FDOH here in Brevard, I trust her. I trust a number of emergency medicine physicians in the area. I don't want to identify them because, frankly, I'm afraid of what will happen to them if individuals hear, well, these are the individuals that pushed Brian Loeber to push for masking policy. I don't want to abuse their friendship and their trust. But I'll tell you, you know, I listen to folks that have the expertise in the area because I don't have it.
I always say I trust science, I have faith, and I use my common sense. And with that, we're going to go to our second segment. We'll hear a few messages from our sponsors, and we'll bring you back with the other guests as well.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, and online at WWBC. You just hit that button that says Listen Live. So our first segment was with Commissioner Brian Loeber, and we talked a little bit about the CARES Act and the funding and what he's been doing with his allotted amount of money that he's given out, the allocations, and it went to a lot of nonprofits and places that thank you so much that people need to keep functioning. Our second segment is with Marianne Otto, and she graduated from New York University with a degree in occupational health. Early in her career, she gained recognition I was reading this and I was chuckling, for Nintendo Wii in the rehab setting. You have to explain that to our listeners, Miss Marianne Otto. And then we're going to talk a little bit about homeschooling. And it's called the Adirondack Learning.
Adirondack. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't say that word to save my life. So I'm glad you said it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and the Learning Academy.
So with Adirondack Learning Academy, we are based out of Melbourne, Florida. And we are an online homeschool curriculum provider for students in grades K-12. We offer all of the core courses for English, science, math, and history, as well as foreign language courses, career and technical education courses. So well over 100 courses offered through K-12 programming.
So how did you go from being an occupational therapist in that setting to getting involved with homeschooling?
So early on, I worked in early intervention, school-based occupational therapy. And then once I had my fourth child, I decided to leave the clinic and move more into education. It seemed like a very natural transition because I had also taught in local occupational therapy college programs in New York State. At about the same time, my second child was struggling with an IEP in the public school system. And so I decided midway through his fifth year of public schooling to transition him to homeschooling. I tried to do the curriculum organization on my own, research worksheets, research state education requirements, and it's a monumental task. At that time, I found another online program that I worked for a short period of time, and developed from what I wanted for my son and what I had seen in the curriculum deficiencies of the other online program, decided to develop, along with the co-owner, Karen Barches, Adirondack Learning Academy. So we took everything that I knew I needed as a homeschooling parent, everything that she and I knew that we needed as far as a curriculum for students to meet the requirements for education and advancement to the next grade level in their state, and we developed Adirondack Learning Academy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, this Adirondack Academy Learning, this is all over the United States or just here in Melbourne? Because I thought it looks like it's in New York, too.
It is. So we have the two offices. We have the one that runs the northern region, and then I'm down here, down in the south. We hold a national accreditation. So our students come from across the United States. And we also now have international students who are in Honduras, the Philippines. We've had a student from Serbia who are seeking an American education because they might be there temporarily. Their parents might be in the military and on deployment, but they still want to continue with the American curriculum so that when they come back to the States, they're able to then transition into schooling.
Well, I tell you, we have a commissioner here with us, Brian Loeber, and he had a question for you.
Yes, ma'am. Marianne, hopefully you can hear me. I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about the differences between virtual schooling, free online schooling, and also an accredited online homeschool curriculum.
I was able to hear the beginning of it. You were asking about virtual schooling.
Yes, ma'am. Virtual schooling and then free online schooling. And lastly, an accredited online homeschool curriculum. I was just hoping you could speak to those and what the differences and similarities are.
So when we look at an online curriculum provider such as Adirondack Learning Academy, what we are looking at is we look at
what the requirements are for that state. So let's say in fifth grade, for example, a student in Florida, we're going to make sure that the parent who has an accredited flexible online curriculum has courses which meet those educational requirements.
State by state.
Then we're going to also take a look at the free online schooling programs. So really, they aren't necessarily free per se. Often free online schools require the student to follow the guidelines of an actual virtual school that they're connected to, and not your curriculum choices. So this becomes very important, because a lot of times homeschooling parents want the freedom to choose the type of curriculum. Sometimes it's for religious reasons. Sometimes, I hesitate to say this, but some parents do not like the Common Core curriculum and prefer that their children learn a more traditional curriculum like you and I learned in school. And so when you are in a free online school, you often don't get those liberties that you would as a true homeschooling parent. So those are the main differences. With a program such as ours, what you have is, with the virtual schools, like many of the ones that you see highly advertised, they're actually a type of a charter school that are most often run by private for-profit companies. And so there are hidden costs, whereas with our program, you don't have hidden costs. Everything is included in that. So when you go to some of the virtual schools that are actually kind of hidden charter schools, you might be looking at additional course fees, where maybe they're only offering English, science, math, and history, but if you want to take elective foreign language courses, career and technical education courses, it's at an a la carte rate. So it's important to take a look at what you're looking for as far as the quality of education for your student. Obviously, there's going to be some financial considerations involved as well. And you also need to look at as far as the benefits of each program and what's going to work best for you and your family.
Wow. Thank you. That's very interesting, because, you know, right now we're hearing so much in the media about homeschooling, whether it's virtual or brick and mortar or whatever people are doing now because of COVID-19. So you cleared up a lot of similarities and differences that we've been hearing.
And a lot of misconceptions as well.
Yes.
She made sure to explain that there may be a hidden cost. And also, they might not be accredited, which is a common problem here in Florida with our private charter schools. Marianne, I have a question for you. This is Samantha. Hi. What are the benefits of homeschooling?
There are a lot of benefits of homeschooling. One that we talked about answering the previous question is really the parents driving the student's curriculum. Again, we talk about Common Core, we talk about religious reasons. So you're really involved as the parent. Now, that doesn't mean that we are talking about the traditional stereotype of a homeschooling parent sitting down with textbooks at the kitchen table. That is still done from time to time. But what we're looking at right now, especially with COVID and the emphasis really being put on homeschooling, we have to differentiate the difference between crisis schooling, which is what has occurred in the public school systems right now.
Crisis is the true word, because parents are having to shuffle so many things to make that happen.
Correct. Parents and teachers were kind of thrown into what they are calling homeschooling. But in actuality, that's not homeschooling. It is crisis schooling. It was trying to keep education accessible to students and families in a crisis situation. Whereas with homeschooling, it is organized, it is planned out, there's a curriculum to follow. So again, one of the benefits is having a curriculum to follow. The family, one of the things that I found, at least with my family, was that we learned to really get along with one another and to appreciate each of our individual differences. You have to think about, in a public school system, the number of hours spent outside of the home, and then if you have both working parents, the amount of actual time together is pretty minimal in the evening. Whereas when you're homeschooling, you're there all day, every day.
Yeah.
And so you do learn. You do learn to get along as far as bringing the family together, bonding as a family. The accessibility to learn through the environment. You'll often see homeschooling families that are doing homeschooling field trips to add to the online curriculum. So the Brevard Zoo, for example, has a wonderful homeschooling program there. My children did it as well to study.
Yeah.
Zoo animals.
Well, they do. I read before that homeschooling offers children a significant opportunity to mix with children of different ages in different groups. And the homeschooling parents, they move in a certain circle. So you're right. It's very different from what happened with COVID-19 and the virtual schools. So I was going to ask you, can children with special needs be homeschooled?
They can. They can most definitely be homeschooled. It's a little bit different because, remember, you're not working with a child study team now. So as far as any kind of short-term, long-term educational goals, modifications, once you withdraw from the public school system and the school district, you, for the most part, school districts will no longer evaluate, assess, and develop IEPs for the students. However, with our program specifically, we will take previous documentation from the school districts, school psychologists, private doctors, and we are able, with our curriculum, to modify the curriculum to meet the educational needs of the students. The other benefit is, in typical IEP modifications, they have as much time as they need to complete their assignments, so they aren't pressured in a classroom. Any students who are highly distracted by any kind of other students talking in a classroom, just the large class size at times in some of the classrooms, you now have students who are working in an environment that works well for them. It's a quieter environment at their own pace and on their own schedule. So if it's a student with special needs who is on a medication regimen where they're awake at night and drowsy during the early morning hours, they're no longer forced to wake up early morning because at a work at your own pace curriculum, they could start their courses at noon, let's say, when that's optimum time for them.
So you take away the anxiety factor. And that, you know, a lot of kids, the anxiety of getting to school on time, on top of already having an issue, it creates severe challenges for the kids during the day.
Correct. And again, you know, specific to our program, we have one learning coach that is assigned to each student. And the purpose of that learning coach is to offer academic support on an as-needed basis. So we might not have a child study team per se, but we do have someone who develops the rapport with the student and then modifies the curriculum accordingly based on that student's individual needs. So homeschooling, you are able to tailor the curriculum and develop your own academic goals. And it works quite well because, like you said, Sita, you take the anxiety out of learning and you oftentimes see those struggling students blossom in the homeschool environment.
Even adults have issues with getting to work on time. It creates anxieties.
She's 100% right. I've seen it. My autistic godson is flourishing at home, where at school he was struggling.
And then you have the bullying factor, the other kids picking on him. So we have another question for you from Commissioner Lober.
Okay, so I was hoping you could tell me, I mean, obviously, I think all of us knew someone that was homeschooled when we were younger, but at least from my recollection, it wasn't nearly as popular a thing as it is now. And I'm just wondering if you can talk as to maybe what's increased its popularity and really how much that's changed over the past few years.
Well, I think initially, I would say maybe over the past 10 years or so, I think bullying in the public school system is what kind of led to an interest in homeschooling. I think a lot of parents were looking for a different learning environment, a safer learning environment. I'm very sad to say the school violence numbers, I think, also kind of alerted parents to the great potential that there is for learning and succeeding with homeschooling. So I think that's part of it. And then I think some of the changes overall in the school systems as far as curriculum and testing and standardized testing,
And I think a lot of parents have seen that when you homeschool, one of the questions I get all the time is, how many hours a day do you have to homeschool? You have to remember that homeschooling is content-focused learning. You mm-hmm. don't have a lunch period. You don't have recess. So you don't have all these fillers throughout the day, assemblies, things like that. So it's content-focused learning, and I think that really does appeal to parents, because if you look at the numbers, do any of the research and look at the studies, homeschooling students soar when it comes to SAT, ACT scores, college acceptances. And so I think that a lot of these unfortunate circumstances have led parents to really research the realm of homeschooling, and they've seen that it really is a positive experience for students.
So, Marianne, before we go further, can you give our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends the website so they could check out the Adirondack Learning Academy?
It's www.AAPD, KKevin learning.com.
And your role there, do you, I mean, I forgot to ask you, like, do you have a title there, or it's just that you're one of the teachers? What do you do with them?
I'm co-owner. I'm also director of admissions. So anyone who is interested in learning more about it would speak with me directly, for two reasons. One is that I have the most experience as far as transitioning students, including a special needs student, from the public school, Catholic school system into homeschooling. And then I do some learning coaching as well, just to keep my hands in the curriculum. Because, you know, there's always changes in technology, education. So I want to have my fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the curriculum so that we can always look to improve when needed.
So one question really quick. So my friend asked me earlier, so how do you guys get paid? Because the Brevard public school system gets an allotted amount of money per child. Then does that money then come to you all with this homeschooling?
It does not.
It does not.
On occasion. No. On occasion, we will have schools for special cases that will pay for students for homeschooling. So it might be in a case where they can't provide for that particular student. Otherwise, it is private pay. But as far as, again, if you research other programs that are out there, our rates are extremely low, because what we always felt was that parents want a quality education for their students, but they may not be able to afford, especially during these times, private school tuition rates. And so we've always kept the rates down to make it accessible for a quality education for a parent to provide to their students.
I have a question for you, Marianne. We had a crisis mm-hmm. here in being able to test our children in their native language when they came after Hurricane Maria. When you do your mm-hmm. assessments, do you guys test in the native language, and do you service the second language community?
So we don't test in the second language. We actually don't do any of the testing. Now, are you talking about placement testing or?
Yes, here in our county, we ran into the issue where we didn't have placement tests in the native language. So the children tested very low in English when they came here.
Unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, we don't have testing in the native language. Our curriculum will translate. So we have been able to get students where English was their second language to be quite successful in the program, because the curriculum will translate. But as far as placement testing, that we don't offer in their native language.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. So, you know, people often ask, can you teach a child over the internet? Well, of course, my grandchildren are doing virtual learning, and they're getting all A's, and they actually are loving being at home and being able to raid the refrigerator on their break. You know,
their budget's not loving it.
I mean, they're just, my daughter and my daughter-in-law likes it because they enjoy being around the kids and assisting them. So when people ask you, can children learn over the internet, what do you say to them?
Well, they absolutely can learn over the internet. You know, you have to present engaging content. You have to develop a rapport with the student. One of the successful strategies that we use is chunking up the information so that they're short and concise, and that they have review questions that immediately follow the lesson. We tend to focus on one concept at a time.
we also look to work on, we know our kids all love video games and interacting with, whether it's YouTube videos, whether, again, they're video games. And so what we like to do is act on a concept called gamification, where the course content is presented in a way where the students are actively engaged in it. So it kind of taps into that area in their brain where they can sit and focus on a video game for how many hours, but then they can't focus on 30 minutes of an online lesson. So what we've incorporated is this concept of a dynamic interactive curriculum to get them to engage so that they're focused for that period of time. They get the information, they retain the information, it's reviewed, they're questioned on it, and they do well.
So each, I guess what you're saying is every child is different and every child learns differently. And you guys have found the secret to that success is that you have to look at the children individually, formulate a care plan on what works for this child and what doesn't. And you sit with the parents and you present it. And I guess that's a winning formula for children who needs the additional assistance at home like that.
Absolutely. And Marianne, we have one more question for you. Are there less opportunities for social interaction for homeschooled students?
No. So that's one of the big myths out there. And I hear that all the time when I talk to parents across the country for admissions. The big myth is that once you homeschool your child, they're isolated, they become socially awkward, and that's not the case at all. With homeschooled children, they have more opportunities because of the flexibility in scheduling. So they're able to volunteer. They're able to attend different groups within the community. Socialization is fantastic because, you know, everyone thinks that students go to school in order to make their friendships. But that's really not where friendships are made. Because if you remember when we were in school, how often were we told, you didn't come here to socialize, you came here to learn.
All the time.
You know, I remember that.
And I'm a chatterbox too.
And you're absolutely correct, because with social media nowadays, the children are at lunch and they're on their phones.
Even though they shouldn't be, the school says 17.
You know?
Right. And a lot of times they're rushed through a lunch period because they have to get to the next class. If you look again at research across the board, the average recess, now when we were in school it was a little bit longer, but it's approximately 27 minutes per day. So still, socialization is occurring all around the school or the classroom, not necessarily within the public school itself. When you have another myth about, you know, like we talked, children in schools do not necessarily have more opportunities to interact with others, but when we also look at the prevalence of bullying and unfortunately school violence as well, the interactions in school are not always positive.
I know, I remember people picking on people. I don't know, Brian, if you've had this experience, but when we were younger, I mean, even the clothing you wore, if you were from a poor family and you couldn't afford the nice clothes and shoes and have your hair done, people picked on you.
I think it really depends on what you make of it and who you're interacting with. I mean, there's, to me, obviously, I'm not going to say bullying is a good thing. I think it's not, very simply, but I think there is a value in learning, whether it's at school or elsewhere, that not everyone is going to be good-natured all the time. I don't think that that's necessarily something that's lost in homeschooling, as long as there's enough interaction that's taking place. When I was a kid, that makes me sound so old. When I was a kid and I was in school, we had one gentleman who came in who was homeschooled to my high school. And, you know, he was a nice guy. I will tell you, he was certainly far more book smart than the average person that had gone through the public school system as I did up to that point. Did he dress a little better than the rest of us and, you know, act a little nerdier because he didn't necessarily have the same social interactions? Yeah, but then again, we're talking decades ago at this point. So I think, you know, that the situation in all likelihood necessarily has changed. So I can't say that the concerns that existed years back necessarily still exist or exist to the same level now. I think, you know, it's really incumbent on the parents, whether their kid's in school or not, to make sure that the kid isn't just isolating himself or herself in their room playing video games until, you know, the sun comes up in the morning, but making sure they're interacting like normal humans.
Yeah. And you know what it is, too? Like, we all say everything starts in the home, right? The parents are the first line of defense. If the parents are involved in their children, I mean, whether it's homeschool or public school or virtual school, like my grandchildren, they absolutely love getting up and getting online. But you do have some parents that would want to use being at home with their children and say, okay, you're in school now. I have to run out to the gym. So you can't do that, right? You have to stay engaged.
Absolutely. And, you know, whether it's public school, homeschooling, you have to be engaged with your child. Just like Brian said, you know, there is parental responsibility there to make sure that they're not 12 hours a day in their room just staring at a screen playing a video game. So that's where, you know, the blaming homeschooling for the lack of socialization, lack of opportunities for socialization, it really doesn't apply nowadays anymore because the programs, the extracurricular activities, some states now will also allow homeschool students to participate in public school sports.
That's great.
And in choral programs. We had a few in chorus, and it was great.
We have so many nonprofits in Brevard that homeschooling parents are involved in. I know with Habitat for Humanity, they're involved in the beach cleanup. They're involved in so many things with the environment. I mean, I've had a lot of homeschooling parents that wanted to come on the show, and they've told me what their kids are doing. So thank you for what you're doing and giving our children in Brevard this option. Give us your website one more time, Ms. Marianne Addo, and then we'll have to say goodbye. So to give us the website one more time.
It's www.adklearning.com, and I really do appreciate this opportunity to speak with you and your friends today.
Well, you know, we always say Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is fun, unscripted, educational, and quite informative. And we've learned a lot today from you and Commissioner Lober. I hope to have you on again, and we will put all your information on our website. And Brian, we will certainly put the CARES Act and what you have
done.
And the website, the link for the forms and everything.
And
thank you for being here and being part of our show today. And Samantha, you too.
My pleasure. And I'm sorry if I went off script at all, Sita.
You were fine. You were wonderful.
You were great, Commissioner. And thank you, Marianne, for the hard work you do and for our children.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care, everyone.
Yeah,
thanks,
hope you feel better.
Bye-bye.
She did good.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.
You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM. Thank you.